Giger. Chibis.
Welcome to Big Timmy's house. My name is Big Timmy. Joining me this week, as always, is my lovely wife, Lady Giggles.
Hello.
And Milo the cat is currently...
on top of the shelving.
He's sort of hanging around.
Yes.
Because he's seen the microphone come out and he's like, now
look,
I can...
look, microphone.
Now I'm going to be with you.
Yay.
Let's throw things on the floor.
Hooray. So, this week... we are once again in the UK coming up to Remembrance Sunday. Sunday.
Yep.
So, for those of you who don't know, it's basically we sort of remember the people that fought...
and died for us.
Died for us.
In so that we the can many live, wars that we've had.
So that we can live a happy and free
peaceful
world.
Well, peaceful...
yeah.
World. In inverted commas.
Just as a side note, the British Legion are actually recognising the victims of war as well
yes,
now.
Yes, they are.
They've sort of started doing a white poppy, which they're promoting alongside the red poppy.
One, yep.
The red poppy is to represent the servicemen and women who've died for us. The white poppy is meant to represent the innocent victims that
the
have
civilians that have died.
Yeah, which I think is nice that it's all been
recognised. It's all part and parcel, isn't it, unfortunately?
Yeah. I think with any war, even the service people are victims themselves.
Yeah, exactly. So
sometimes they're forced into a... well, they're, as we're going to learn today, sometimes people are forced into war by society in general. So I thought we could look at some related topics to this. So, I'll start. Do you mind if I start?
You can start, yep.
So, I looked into some of the youngest British soldiers in World War One. World War One. I'm trying to think now.
What?
Poppy Day covers everything.
Well, it covers everything, yeah.
But it mainly came after World War Two, didn't it?
Yes.
So, these guys... well, you guys at home might know some of these chaps... you might not, who knows? So, some of the youngest soldiers here. Hang on. So, the youngest authenticated British soldier in World War One was a 12-year-old boy named Sidney Lewis, who fought at the Battle of the Somme, which was one of
one
of the biggest battles, and the most violent battles. Lewis's claim was not authenticated until 2013. In World War One, a number of young boys joined up to serve as soldiers before they were 18, the legal age to serve in the army. It was previously reported that the youngest British soldier was an unnamed boy, also 12, sent home from France in 1917 with other underage boys from various regiments. So, at the time, basically... young boys were signing up.
Yeah, because they could going out just to war. needed the men, didn't they?
Well, it was. I think it's more about the fact that it was seen as the thing to do. Like,
true,
we've got to go
true,
out
yeah.
and fight the war.
Yeah, that is true.
So, yeah, I mean, whether they needed the men or not, it's like sort of like, would you send a 12-year-old out
no,
to fight?
No, of course not. Don't be silly.
Exactly. So. I just thought we could talk about some of them. So I'll read you the stories and we can...
okay.
You know. George Marr. So he was born in 1903.
Mm-hmm.
So he would have been about 13.
Yep.
And he was only 13 when he lied to a recruiting officer by claiming he was 18 and was allowed to join up with the 2nd Battalion, the King's Own Royal Lancaster Regiment. Marr was sent to the front lines and his actual age was not found out until he began crying during heavy shelling and was taken before an officer of his regiment to reveal his young age. George said he was then locked in a train with a number of other young boys who had all lied to join up as well. The youngest of 12 years... Ma said the youngest was 12 years old. A little nuggety bloke he was too. We joked that the other soldiers would have had to lift him up to see over the trenches. So, I mean, it's not
no,
as if they're...
It, exactly.
It's not as if they're like... They can see that they're like... They're young. They're young, yeah.
Considering the develop... How boys develop, they're still growing until they're like 21, 22, 23, 24.
Yeah.
You know, so if they're 13, they're probably not even 5 foot.
Well, like,
unless
you
they're
can,
really, really, unless they're,
you can
they're
tell
really,
the
really,
difference between a 13-year-old yeah, and an 18-year-old. Like, it's not difficult.
No.
These people, you know.
Yeah, no.
They just needed people to throw in front of bullets,
they did,
basically.
Unfortunately.
Like, oh, we've got to save the higher ups, haven't we? Let's throw some teenage boys in front of them. So the boy that Ma met was formally reported as the youngest British soldier in World War One, but that's never been authenticated. Mm. So, Sidney Lewis,
mm-hmm.
Sidney George Lewis, again born in 1903, enlisted in the East Surrey Regiment in 1915. At the age of 12, he fought in the Battle of the Somme in 1916. Isn't this the guy we mentioned at the beginning?
Yeah, it was the guy mentioned.
So this guy is the authenticated youngest,
right?
He fought in the Battle of the Somme in 1916. Then, aged 13, in the 106th Machine Gun Company of the Machine Gun Corps, he fought in the Battle of Deville Wood, which saw some of the worst casualties on the Somme. He was sent home after his mother sent his birth certificate to the War Office and demanded his return.
Yeah, I can imagine so. Get my boy back here now!
He was awarded the Victory Medal and the British War Medal. He re-enlisted in 1918 and served with the army of the occupation in Austria. He rejoined the police in Kensington-upon-Thames after the war and served in a bomb disposal squad in World War II.
Oh, wow.
Later, he ran a pub, the Frant, in East Sussex. He died in 1969.
Wow.
Although many World War I Army recruiters often turned a blind eye to underage recruits, another factor may have been Lewis's mature appearance. He was a tall, heavily built boy, growing to 6 feet 2 inches as an adult. The minimum height requirement for the British Army at the time was only 5 feet 3 inches. So if you were like 5 foot tall, you wouldn't have got in.
No, true.
So
they obviously had to be tall. Tall enough to do it.
Well, you've got to see over the trenches and, you know.
I know, but I'm only I'm not even 5 foot four. I'm 5 foot 3 3/4.
You'd be eligible.
Just about be eligible.
Yeah.
I'm like, hello, hello, hello. Jumping up and down.
Lewis's claim has been authenticated by the Imperial War Museum after research by Van Edmund uncovered the evidence, including the family papers and Lewis's birth certificate. The family papers have been donated by the donated to the museum. Let me try that again. The family papers have been donated to the museum by Lewis's surviving son. Lewis's story was also found to have been reported in newspapers at the time. And so there was a BBC in 2014 did a documentary called Teenage Tommies.
Nice.
Which is about all the British Army recruited, all the boys that the British Army recruited. There were 250,000 boys under 18 during World War One.
What?
This included Horace Isles, who was shamed into joining up after being handed a white feather by a woman at the age of 14.
What?
He died at the Battle of the Somme at the age of 16. Also signing up as a private at age 14 was Reginald St. John Battersby. He was promoted to second lieutenant at the insistence of his father and headmaster, who had thought that his rank was beneath him. Battersby was wounded by machine gun fire while leading his men over the top of the Somme. 3 months later, he lost a leg to shell fire. So, if you can imagine that shows you in society at the time, where, like, his dad was more concerned about
his
rank.
Then
oh,
his life,
well, bloody,
yeah.
you should be a second lieutenant.
Yeah, then his life, yeah, Christ.
Get out there and fight the Jerrys. It's like,
wow. Okay.
You guys are dicks.
Yeah, big time.
So, yeah, I think it's important to remember the fact that some people gave up their entire futures.
Yeah, absolutely, they did.
To sort of look after us and ensure that we've got a future in which we can be complete dicks to people on the internet.
Yep. Absolutely.
And people continue to do that as well today, to this day. So.
That's true. That's
do you
very
have
true.
A, something you want to share?
I do. I have. What do I have? Victory Cross Heroes. I have the hero side of World War One.
Okay.
The Victoria Cross was first awarded in 1857. So this was way before World War One.
Yeah.
So obviously there obviously was some other wars before that.
There's wars all the time,
wars,
yeah. We love a good war.
Apparently so.
We had the Hundred Years' War at one point, and that was a war for 100 years.
That is true, in
the olden
one of
days.
Our previous...
Yeah.
At Bodiam Castle, wasn't it? Yes, I remember rightly.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is basically a war... this is one of the highest awards available to the British and Commonwealth Armed Forces for gallantry in action with the enemy. So I say, during World War One, 628 people were awarded this award. There is a book about it, apparently, telling you the story and their conflict. But here's a few of them. So we have Albert Ball. He was known as the British best aviator. He had a reputation earned while serving the Royal Flying Corps, with 44 confirmed and 25 unconfirmed kills. He wrote in this book, "I hate this game, but this is the only thing one must do just now. It won't be lovely when all these beastly killings is over, and we can just enjoy ourselves, but not hurt anyone. Won't it be lovely?" Sorry, ignore me.
So, like, wouldn't it be lovely?
Wouldn't it be nice in peacetime? Yeah, exactly.
Isn't it weird that they, like, record the
kills? Yeah, the kills, exactly. It's scary. He was awarded...
Could you imagine if we, like, if we had, like, that as a societal thing, it was just, like, we kept record of the kills we had, I'd have loads. I'm joking.
He was awarded the Victoria Cross, having crashed his plane during a dogfight involving a German ace, Lothar von Richthofen, near somewhere in France. So there's a little bit more about him. So then we move on to John Jack Travis Cornwall. John Jack Travis Cornwall was a boy first class on HMS Chester during the Battle of Jutland. Only 16 years old, speaking of which. He courageously stuck to his guns throughout and died of injuries soon after. He was the youngest Victoria Cross winner of World War One.
That's crazy to think, isn't it? Like, the bravery you must have had just to be like, I'm sticking to this gun. It's like everyone's bombing him and stuff.
Ooh, wow, hello. So we then go to Noel Chavez.
You've got to say it with like a Chavez.
Yeah. Noel was the only double Victoria Cross winner in World War One.
He won two.
And is one of only three in the history of the medal.
Really?
Apparently so. Part of the Royal Army Medical Corps attached to the King's Liverpool Regiment.
Ah, there you go. That's
he was honoured in consecutive years for selfless actions on the Western Front. He led rescue and recovery missions in no man's lands despite aggressive shell fire and took a fatal shot to the head at the Battle of Pascheladine.
I don't know. I can't pronounce that word.
No.
So wait, he He got two for going out onto the battlefield and dragging people out, basically.
Yeah, so he's obviously off the medical unit, and
that is like keeping to your oath sort of thing. Like, I'm going to save these people,
and died in what he did best. Unfortunately,
it's crazy to think, isn't it?
Yeah,
his like family must have been so proud.
Oh, absolutely.
Could you imagine just being like, he didn't just do it once, he did it twice, and he died doing that. Yeah,
exactly.
Like, I couldn't even imagine it. Wow.
So, yeah. So, here's another one. William left Robinson. He was 21, or then aged 21, was awarded the Victoria Cross for shooting down a Zeppelin airship.
Oh, wow.
That's impressive, isn't it? The world's first long-range...
Yeah, think of the amount of people that died.
Wow.
Like, that's like a lot of explosion.
Yeah. It was world's first long-range bomber used by Germany over southern England. The Zeppelins threw at a high altitude out of the reach of ground fire. And at first, they seemed impervious to air attack. My brain is literally just putting out words. I don't even know what I'm saying.
Just throwing them out until they stick. It's all right.
A combination of explosive and incendiable bullets was the answer. The blaze of the Zeppelin shot down by Robinson's was so fierce, even the framework of the Zeppelin disappeared.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That's like... Wow.
So there is a picture, and it's a great picture, of William Robinson was cheered by his fellow airmen the day after destroying the Zeppelin over Herefordshire.
Really?
Yeah.
That's how far they got?
Herefordshire, yeah. Apparently so. Wow.
That's insane, actually.
That is insane.
Well, I guess if they were that high up, though, they could just be like, fuck you, we're going to Scotland.
Yeah. In April the following year, Robinson himself was shot down over France by the squadron led by Manfred von... It's another Richthofen. The Red Baron. Oh, my goodness me.
The actual Red Baron.
The Red Baron. And spent the rest of the conflict in prisoner of war. Oh, no.
At least he survived, though.
He did, making repeated attempts at escape. He died of influenza within a fortnight of returning home after the war. Oh, bless him.
At least he got to see home, though.
Yeah, that's true.
There were people that didn't.
That is true. This one's quite a good one as well.
He shot the Zeppelin down.
Like... Totally. I'm liking some of these people. So we have William Hackett. William Hackett was of the Royal Engineers, was on a 5-man tunnelling mission near Givenchy in June 1916, when a mine exploded. The hole was dug, allowing 3 of the men to escape, but Hackett refused to leave a wounded colleague behind. Thomas Collin, who was 22, of the Welsh regiment. I was a tunneller, he said. I must look after the others first. The tunnel collapsed, killing both men, and attempts to recover their bodies failed. Hackett is the only tunneller to receive the Victoria Cross during World War One.
And that's quite interesting, because in a game I was playing called Valiant Hearts, basically one of the characters was one of those tunnellers, and you sort of...
Yeah.
The game's quite good because it actually shows you maybe roles that you didn't really think about.
Yeah, that's it, exactly.
And you're seeing it from the perspective of a French guy, a German, who was actually married to the French guy's daughter.
Yep.
And an American.
American.
An African-American guy.
Yes.
So look how racist they were.
Yeah,
sort of thing.
Totally. It's a really good game, actually.
Yeah,
really. And I loved watching it.
The ending is so it's brilliant, and you should. That is probably your homework, guys. That's my recommendation for this.
Yeah,
week,
totally.
Is Valiant Hearts. So, but be prepared. Have some tissues handy.
Yeah, because it's a bit sad.
Yeah,
it's a bit sad. Oh, and the dog is just so cute in the game. Oh,
yeah, there's
the
a
dog.
Medical dog because they had dogs
they
that
had
would
dogs.
Basically
yeah run across the yeah. The
offering aid.
No man's land, didn't they?
Yeah, basically giving people taking medical supplies with them, or and obviously the pigeons they were messengers.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's quite a good time to reflect about all those things. And if you do get a second, I would recommend just reading a book or watch a documentary about what these guys went through, because it's fascinating. Maybe listen to a podcast about it. Don't listen to this.
No.
Have it on repeat all the time. Constantly like, wow, I learnt the same thing 7 times. No, if you can, have a look at some of the documentary. There's a recent one that I believe Peter Jackson worked on, where they were sort of recolouring the war, like footage of them out in the war. I can't remember what it's called now. So the film is actually called They Shall Not Grow Old.
Oh, and yes.
It's,
oh, shush.
It's using state-of-the-art technology and materials from the BBC and the Imperial War Museum. Filmmaker Peter Jackson allows the story of World War I to be told by the men who were there. Life on the front is explored through the voices of the soldiers, who discuss their feelings about the conflict, the food they ate, the friends they made, and their dreams of the future. And you can... I believe it's actually on television on the 10th of November this year. So if you're listening to this when it came out, well done. You can watch the movie on the Sunday. It's on at 10 past 10 on BBC Two. And I think if you look, I mean, to be honest, if you look, it's usually on like iPlayer, and there's some of the cinemas are showing it now. Because of it being, you know, the time of year where we're remembering our sort of war dead. Yeah, I think that's a good place to leave it, unless you've got something else you want to discuss.
Well, see, there's lots of unsung heroes, but all, you know, through all the
conflicts
and stuff. Like, obviously, there's the gentleman who has probably been around on Facebook. There's that video on Facebook where he was in looks like a studio, and all his people that he, all the children that he saved, are in the.
Oh, so it's the, you're talking about the chap who took in all the Jewish children.
Yeah, and saved all those Jewish children. And again, there's another. I think it was a lady who would...
There's a lot of people who, no, weren't necessarily soldiers, but contributed to the war sort of thing.
In different ways.
There's a load of places in Paris and all over France where you have people were hiding Jewish people, and they were making compartments for them to hide in.
Yeah.
And there's a book that I read recently called The Paris Architect, which actually talks about a chap that did that. Now it's based on true events, but I don't think it's, you know, actually
true.
And it's actually quite amazing, because you generally think of like, oh, the French people were the Germans were the bad guys,
yeah,
and the French people were good, but the French people turned on their own,
mm-hmm.
and also were insanely xenophobic about the Jewish people. Like, they were, it was a common thing back then to be like racist and xenophobic,
yeah, that's it,
and,
exactly.
and, you know,
it's not as prominent as
anti-Semitic
it is now.
And stuff like that. Well, I mean, it's, yeah, I guess it is less prominent now.
It's like, we've obviously been to Germany, haven't we? And we went to a Gestapo headquarters, didn't we?
Yes.
And oh my goodness me, seeing all the things that they tested to see if you were Jewish, like the size of your nose.
Well, they had propaganda up saying like, oh, well, you know, who knows, this guy could be...
Yeah, exactly. This
guy could be Jewish, and he could be trying to get you. And, well, let's put it this way, I would be in prison.
Yeah.
if that was the kind of thing, because I've got a big nose and curly hair.
Well, I've got curly hair, so we'll both be in prison.
Yeah, but I've got two.
But the worst of it's not
only... And I'm funny, so...
But the worst of it wasn't only that. It wasn't just the Jews, was it? It was the gypsies. If you had... were politically...
Vocal.
They would put you in...
If you were gay as
if
well.
If you were gay, yeah, absolutely.
There's actually a story in Dortmund, where we were at the Gestapo headquarters, where they were saying that there was like a local celebrity couple who were lesbians, and they, the people of Dortmund rioted and got them out of the carriage, if you remember.
Yeah.
And you sort of like, that was like, that's awesome. But they were like, we're not letting them go.
Yeah.
We love these women.
Yeah. It's quite sad, because obviously a lot of people think it's all about the Jewish community, but it's a lot more. It was a lot bigger than you realised.
I think actually you probably find that most people know more now because we're talking about it.
Yes, definitely.
Because there is a big thing, and I find it with the older generations. They don't like to talk about things that make them uncomfortable.
No, they don't like to talk about the war.
Well, it's not that. It's just being comfortable. Like, you mentioned the fact that, anecdotally, there's lots of stories about how in Britain Jewish people were treated badly.
Yeah.
Look how badly we treated gay people up until...
Recently.
Yeah. And you sort of see these things and you're a bit like, they'll be like, no, we were never like that. And you're sort of like, actually, you were, because there's evidence. Well, I personally never did this. And you're like, yeah, but that doesn't mean society is doing that.
Exactly, that's it. You're one person. Society is thousands of people.
Yeah.
If the 9,999 people are doing it, you're just one person.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So. But that doesn't mean that anyone shouldn't be nice to people just because everyone else is being a dick.
No, everyone should be nice to people.
That's the one thing I think we should take from the valiant hearted people. We should say, like, look, these guys were helping anyone. And
absolutely.
And that's...
It's a really good game. It's a really, really good game.
Yeah, but I mean, the storyline is better.
The
storyline is actually from Valiant Hearts is based on actual letters that were found where it was a father writing to his daughter, and the story is basically sort of
is
based on this his letters
and his journey through the war.
Yeah, but I think you guys need to go and play it.
Yeah,
and basically just all I want you to think. Do is just sort of have a moment and think about how, I mean, even though the world is pretty shitty, just think about how lucky we are that we're still able to be free to do these things that we want. Society could be a lot worse.
Exactly.
Basically. And I know some people are trying to make it worse. And there's some people that are like, we don't like change, we want to go back to the 40s. But, like, just one day they'll be dead. So don't worry about it. I'm only messing.
I know.
I said it with a big smile on my face.
I know.
No, but in all seriousness, like...
But, yeah.
Just don't be dicks.
Yeah, just love each other. You know, just give people hugs.
And take a moment to just appreciate the fact that we do sort of live in a world where you can be you and not worry about, you know, being persecuted. Unless you are being persecuted, in which case we're really sorry about that. Sorry. We love you. Anyway, we're in a hole now.
We are in a big hole.
So,
we are in a big hole.
Don't forget to check out all the social media rubbish. I don't really think it's appropriate for us to do this at this point, but you know, tradition. We've got
tradition.
To stick with
tradition.
Jazz Chicken on Twitch.
Mm-hmm.
Go give him some love because he's lovely.
He streams again every Saturday, so.
You're bound to find him if you join his Jazz Chicken 87 stream.
Yep. Don't know what he's doing. If he's doing anything specifically for this weekend
for November.
For November.
No, well, it's a perfect opportunity to tune in and
find out
what he's streaming.
Because I say he did a lot of Halloween-y stuff last month, didn't he?
Yeah.
In October.
And I think you can actually check out his highlights, which you should, because
they're funny.
I literally get pages of them texted to me, and I have to sit and just and go through them, and they're always good. He's a good lad. We like you, love you, Jazz. And yeah, that's about it. Yeah. Right, I've been Big Timmy.
I'm Lady Giggles.
Get out of my house.
Mm-hmm. Wear a poppy.
Yeah.
Red or white, doesn't matter.
Well, just donate money to the British Legion.
Yeah.
Or the, you know, your country's version of a hero.
Hero. Or help the heroes.
Hero.
Yeah.
Thing, yeah. Help the heroes, actually, that's a good one as well. Anyway, go do it. Jeez.